From the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network, it's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. Duran Martinez and Alex Clark in the studios of the Michigan Talk Network all over the Great Lakes State. Back again for another hour of the show. Thanks to our guest, Doug Roberts, the deer professor from Conquest Sense, talking about trail cam placement and actually getting deer into our area after the hard winter, because you know what? They've been on the move. Things have been moving around because it's been such a difficult winter. Also, thanks to muskie expert Pete Mayna. We know he fishes for other stuff, but he is the muskie guru, and this being a free fishing weekend in Michigan, no license is required, but you do have to follow the catch limits and size regulations. So make sure you have a fishing guide with you, even though you may not have to have a license this weekend. And don't forget to ask somebody new to head out with you. Take them fishing, just like our good friend Brian Brosdahl is doing right now. He is out Bemidji, Minnesota, right now on the lake. And, bro, welcome back, man. You are one of our on our Meet the Experts page, because that is what you do full time. Aside from talking about fishing, you fish. How are you, buddy?
Hey, good. How you doing, Duran? Nice to hear from you.
You as well. Now, what are you fishing for right now?
Right now, we're fishing for walleyes, catching some jumbo perch and walleyes in Lake Bemidji in the heart of northern Minnesota. I'm actually out on the lake, so you might hear a hook set or a little bit of a breeze or some waves and chop, but it's just a beautiful morning here, and the fish are really active.
Now, you're jigging for walleye on the boat right now?
Yeah, jigging, and just kind of hop it, and the fish are smacking it. Using a lot of Northland jigs, from gumballs to gammies and shiners. And I know you guys have some great spot tails there. I've picked some up there at Frank's and also at some of the local bait shops when I was over there pre-fishing for the other tournament. But they're really eating them. And it's starting to turn, though, with these midge flies starting to come out.
Mm-hmm.
Start the bite go towards night crawlers also.
Really? So yeah. Now explain to me the rig, how heavy you're using in a lake, because this isn't like the Detroit River where we're bouncing 1 ounce, jigs, lead jigs on the bottom because of the current. This is a no current situation.
Yes, a quarter ounce is really nice if you want a real fast drop. Eighth ounce is great for pulling through the weeds. One of the best baits, and you don't hear about it a lot, but if you're fishing heavy vegetation, is a weed weasel. You put a minnow on there, and you'll think, well, those weed guards might prevent fish from getting hooked. Once those fish get hooked, and they always do, because walleyes have a pretty good bite strength, no matter how big they are, once they get hooked, they can't get off. It's like a mouse trap. It sticks to the roof of their mouth. But most of the time, you know, gammy jig is really sharp. Gumball jigs, and even fireballs have a little stinger. But when I was on the Detroit River, that fit my style of fishing, jigging. The only thing, a little heavier jig, and you're sliding with the current. Here, we're doing contour drifting along weed beds and points, and using the wind, and so the boat's sideways, so you get maximum amount of spread with your lines. But when you get to real detailed spots, the real narrow shelves, like I was on yesterday, they're only 15 feet wide, and if you're off, you're off. And the same with Detroit River. Some of those areas, they're right on the break, not steep breaks all the time, but sometimes right on the top or the edge of the break. And if you take your eyes off the Tarova for a second, you're out in outer space.
Yeah, that's usually the best place to be, is on the trolling motor, especially on the Detroit River, because that's one reason they never let me near it.
I just couldn't believe how great the bite was. My best five pre-fishing average from 46 to 48 pounds, and now remember, I don't go back through the spot. I do one pass and get two or three fish, and I'd leave. So it just drove me nuts that I ended up going out on Erie because the fish started exiting the river really fast. It was right on the tail end, and I know we could have had 50 to 55 pound five limit days on the Detroit River had we just been 3 days earlier. And just amazing fishery. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the Detroit River come springtime is just an amazing fishery. And you don't have to be, you know, this is what kills me about this, bro. And we'll get back to real stories here in a second. But when everybody crowds up and nobody's catching anything, why the hell can't you just move?
Oh, exactly. I fished it from from St. Clair all the way to Erie, the American and Canadian side, and had multiple schools of fish. Really love fishing around the bridge. That's one of my favorite spots. Actually, shot an outdoor show right there and caught some big toads on camera. And one of the best things is a fireball jig and a fluke, or if you can put a minnow on the back of the jig. Also, I found that even if you're using a plastic tail, tipping it with a minnow, and then Joe Reimer was in my boat at the time. He likes to stick them up crooked so they make a little vibration. And I don't know, it looks like a ready-to-eat meal, but we had a great time, and I heard that they're starting to go on the Saginaw, and mm-hmm. just ran out of time, but it was a lot of fun, a real abbreviated trip, and I would imagine right now with the muskie opener, guys are chomping at the bit to get some of the big gators.
Yeah, it's going to be a big one for sure. We got a lot of friends getting ready to go out this weekend, and a free fishing weekend. Not a bad day to do it, not a bad weekend to do it. Speaking of Brian Brosdahl here, pro angler, of course you've seen him on everything Fraybill and everything Northland. Bro has been with us for like 7 years now, and very, very good to have him on here. Bro, I know in the Detroit River when we're jigging there, we use stingers. When you come into the lake situation, are you still using stingers for walleye?
Well, actually, I tried jigging, and I caught some smaller fish out there off the reefs, so I had to put down bait fish image spinners, kind of assembled them myself, but I had the spinner blades from Northland Fishing Tackle, but the bait fish image spinners on the chartreuse and kind of Mountain Dew-colored beads, which is that clear mm-hmm. Clear green. But then I found day two of the tournament, we were using the purple bait fish image with it doesn't look like anything that lives there, but with real bright chartreuse beads, and mix it up a little bit and add some different colors, some black beads in there, so it just has a good contrast. But it's like the crawler hauler, but with a little, it's like building a necklace for walleyes, you know. It's, mm-hmm. you just try different styles, and it's crazy, but whatever triggers them is my favorite lure for the day. But you got to try a lot of stuff, because in the boat, I had one gentleman that lives north of Saginaw that fished with me for a day, Don Shepard, and he was throwing on some really crazy colors. He was using curly tails that were green with black heads or gold. But the thing is, without that stinger hook on the Detroit, I'd say that accounted for 60% of our fish.
Right.
They kind of waft at it and miss it, and I don't think that they're biting that light. Just they're big-bodied fish, and by the time they turn it, they just barely grab onto that stinger hook. So it's very important to have a fireball and a stinger, or if you want to use a long shank hook, it's a stick-on stinger. Now they got braid stingers too.
Yeah, I know we've used them we do use them exclusively when we go on, especially for the spring bite. Brian Brosdahl right now doing his show on our show from a lake in Bemidji, Minnesota right now, and you say that the jumbo perch are biting, but you're fishing for walleye.
Yeah, well, the perch are biting like crazy. Since I've been talking to you, I've thrown back two more 11-inchers, kind of one-handed reeling and catching, but multitasking, you know?
Sure.
But the walleyes are down there. The Kyle Waterman, who's the marketing guy for Northland's in my boat, and he just whiffed on a walleye. I hate to put him on the spot like that, but he had one up. They're really pounding it. But, you know, the thing is, too, when you're fishing the Detroit, there are some big pike. And I talked to some people who live near there, never seen a pike before on the river. Huh. We caught two. And we might have been fishing in the wrong waters because I'm not from there, so you're going to fish totally different stuff. But I found a lot of walleyes in those same areas where I caught the pike. And we had them up to 40 inches. So there's some real monster gator pike. And we caught muskies at the mouth of St. Clair between the High Bridge and St. Clair. You can get in those slack pool areas.
Hang on.
Where they were.
Hang on a second for us, bro. We're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit about panfish next here on Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. Thank you.
This is Owen O'Hagan of ClareVirtually.ie inviting you to fish County Clare, Ireland. Now back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. Duran Martinez, Alex Clark in the studios of the Michigan Talk Network. Owen O'Hagan. Gotta love him. County Clare, Ireland. ClareVirtually.ie is where you can find him. And I got another message. Owen is warming up the boat, and he's got the flies all ready and tidied up in the box waiting for us to get over there to Ireland to fish. Now, Brian Brosdahl is my guest and good friend on with us right now. Owen, would you make that trip with me? Brian. Would you make that trip with me to County Clare?
Let me tell you something. Anything that involves catching a fish, getting some bites, I would love to do. I love catching fish all the time.
I've got a place.
Super cool. Let's do it.
The wild trout on Loch Derg in County Clare, Ireland. The invitation has been floating out there for well over a year and a half now, and we need to go. And I think you would need to go.
Oh, I'd love to go catch some trout and. I hear they got great adult pops over there too.
Yeah, they do have. You know what? I've seen the pictures of the pub that's probably been there for about 200 plus years, and it's very inviting. So therefore, yes, we need to go.
Absolutely, I'm in, man. I'll be a stowaway.
I don't think you'll have to stow away. I think any kind of advertising we can do for County Clare and Loch Derg will be welcomed. But
it'd be really cool. And I wonder if they got big bluegills over there.
You know, I know they've got big pike, which I think would be fun.
Absolutely. Pike are just fun, especially when they get large.
Yes, very, very big. Very big. But let's go do something. Let's downsize a little bit, if you will. Want to talk about bluegill. And right now is a really good time to get them because I've been watching them bed up a little bit, and they're really starting to get active in the shallower waters.
Oh, absolutely. As the water temperatures start getting into the low 60s to high 60s, the bluegills move into feed, but they're not spawning yet. They need the 70s before they start making their nests. But the crappies start making their nests in the low 60s. And usually, a lot of times there's surface temperatures, and then there's temperature is 5 feet below. Just know that when it's unilaterally in the low 60s, crappies are going to come into spawn and bluegills in the 70s. And if you get one of those summers where you get cold front after cold front, sometimes they don't spawn. But you can find them near hard bottom areas where there's pencil reeds, maiden cane, rushes, whatever you want to call them. And then also, they will be sometimes on the edge of other vegetation as long as there's some hard bottom near the mud areas. But it's got to be hard bottom. They fan their nests, and wherever there's vegetation, of course, there's a lot of insect hatches coming out of there. There's some 2,200 different forms of midge flies in the United States, and they're the bloodworms that come out in the summertime as midges. And bluegills, crappies love them.
Oh, they do. And one of my favorite ways to catch bluegill on top water is sometimes you'll go to a state park that has a beach area. Well, you know what? Around dusk, when everybody's gone, I like tying on a clear bobber and about 3 to 4 feet behind that on some thin line, dragging a little rubber spider or a black fly, a small black fly, and casting that and retrieving it kind of slow. Man, I tell you what, that is action.
Is there anything better than top water for any kind of fish? It's just fun watching them come up and just hammer it. And bluegills love topwater stuff, and sometimes you could trigger them with flies and little poppers when they won't hit. Even when they're not really taking meat, they're kind of shying away, and there's a lot of hatches going on. They're keying in on things, and I always say you got to match the hatch if you want to get the panfish. And if there's a lot of emerging midges, a small midge type of fly will really work. And if you're in a weed bed and there's water bugs on the surface, you're going to catch fish on little poppers. And even a little tailor off the popper works really well, but don't get to do it as much as I'd like to. But pitching that stuff over real shallow weeds, real dense weeds, really gets fish, And if you can, long rods hitting pockets in the vegetation is probably the best way to do it, because if you hook into great big bluegills, big crappies, you got to pull them kind of vertical. Fight them in the top 30% of the water column. Because if you pull them through the vegetation, I don't care what pound test you got, you could snap it, bend your hook, and lose that big fish of a lifetime. So you just got to be careful and fight your fish in the top part of the water column using a long rod, pulling straight up.
Now, let's talk about sizes because, you know, look, everybody loves a big bluegill. Everybody likes showing off the pictures of their big bulls. But what is the best size to keep? Because there's questions about, you know, kind of limiting some of the big ones you take so we have the genetics so they stay big in the system.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and that question came up when I was doing a seminar at Jay's. I had some people stay after and ask me about what's the best stuff to harvest because they want to fish this lake and they don't want to kill it off. They absolutely love bluegill fishing, and they love eating them. And, you know, I've gone to a lot of meetings, a lot of studies, and there's studies from all the way from eastern parts of the United States and Canada, wherever there's bluegills, they've done studies, 20-year studies, where if you remove the big ones, they can never come back. They don't come back. So if you take all the big ones out of the system, and it's all spawning related mostly, more so than genetics or anything else, spawning related. If you take the big ones, big males out, they're not there to chase the little ones away. And the little ones become active in spawning or sexually active, you know, and they move in to nest. Well, their growth rate stunts when they do that. And if the big males are there to chase them away, then they concentrate on feeding the whole summer. But without them in there, those little ones are going to start going on the nest, and you got a stunted population, and it never comes back. It's been proven, and it's been known since the 50s, but there really isn't any proactive slotting of bluegills. Now, that sounds complicated, but we can build houses and buy a pair of shoes. We can measure those fish, and you know, but limited harvest would really work. And I'm not telling people not to keep fish. Keep what you want. Just the right ones. If you really want your lake to last, I throw over here. We have quite a few lakes that still have nines and tens.
Mm-hmm.
I don't keep them over 9 inches. I keep them around that 7.5 to 8.5 is just perfect harvest, and they're delicious. And let's face it, the big ones taste good too. We don't want to take them. If you want to mount one, mounting a fish or two never killed off the school. That's not killing the school. It's when people get lucky enough to find all the alphas. And then they take them all, but when you really realize that it's only for a fork full of meat, you wreck the lake, it's not worth it anymore. And I was always taught to keep big bluegills and throw the little ones back, and finding out that that's quite wrong. Crappies aren't the same. Crappies, you throw them back if you want someone else to enjoy catching it, or someone in the future, a kid, to catch it. They're a little different. They're cyclical, and it's all food-related, but bluegills, it's all about the spawn. And if the big males aren't there, your population immediately stunts, and it's been proven that it can't right itself, except winter kill situations.
Sure.
Throw that situation, in a totally different light, because you kill off a big population, there's some left over, they forage real heavy, and they get a little bit bigger, but that's it. When I get people calling, they got private ponds, and the best thing to do is identify a few layers down in your population, harvest those fish. If you want to keep a top end for mounting, that never killed off a school, to take a few of those.
Brian Brosdahl, our guest here on Wild Michigan. Check him out, brosguideservice.com. Find him on the Meet the Experts page at wildmichiganradio.com.
You can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. Duran Martinez, your host on the Michigan Talk Network. Talk Network. Yeah, that's what I do. I talk for a living. Isn't that wonderful? Don't forget the Sportsman's Triathlon and Ironman Challenge this time. It's going to be happening in Marquette County, up in Negaunee area. Negaunee Rod and Gun Club. And it's going to be a big one up there. It used to be held at the up in Naubin Way. And this time it's going to be in Marquette County. And it's still going to be happening June 21st and 22nd. Trap shooting, archery, golf. Great time. Get your team of four together and hit them up on the Facebook page, Sportsman's Triathlon and Ironman Challenge, and let them know Wild Michigan sent you. There still have some room for a few folks up there. Right now, I'm going to speak with Chris Munchow from AquaView. Of course, AquaView underwater camera and viewing systems. And this, Chris, welcome back, first of all. We haven't talked to you since there was ice, and there's still ice on Lake Superior.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again, Duran. Yeah, there's a little bit of ice still floating around up there. There have been some really funny pictures of people out on the beach getting some sun with huge ice chunks in the background.
Only in Michigan. Absolutely only in Michigan. Just, you know, honestly. But let's talk about AquaView, because this was a very important tool for me with the ice. But now we have open water. In 99% of Michigan, we have open water. But it's also a very useful tool on the boat, because sometimes we're in really deep waters of a lake, or there may be some holes in the lake that we just can't see. We can only see down about 10 feet maybe, and we want to see what kind of vegetation is down there, what kind of fish might be hanging around there, and AquaView, the best way to go.
Yeah, we're really making some strides on getting anglers to use these cameras for open water. As you said, underwater camera systems have kind of been traditionally associated with ice fishing, but they're really an excellent tool for in the boat. Our micro system, because of the size and portability of the unit, has really helped bridge that gap. And, you know, you said it exactly right. It's a tool that you use maybe not the entire time you're out, but you have it with you, and you can check out and see what's down there. Oftentimes, you can take a look at your electronics and your sonar, and you see fish down there. You see some kind of a weed growth, or you know, maybe you're identifying it as potentially a hard bottom. Then you can take the underwater camera and drop it down and verify what you're seeing. And you'd be amazed at how many times at sports shows and different events when guys say, you know, I was fishing to what I thought were walleyes or what I thought were crappies, and I couldn't get any strikes, so I dropped down the AquaView, and lo and behold, it was rough fish or something. So they'd spent all that time there, or just, as you said, too, identifying the weed growth. You know, are they good fish holding weeds, or are they stringy, non attractive weeds that you're wasting your time targeting?
You know, it's pretty important, because you know what I mean. Don't get me wrong, sonar is great. I love my Humminbird system. But you cannot identify what the fish is. And this is where AquaView comes in. You can find those suspended fish. It might be something you don't even want, you know, or it might be the school of crappie suspended there that you're hoping for.
Yep, that's exactly right. You know, and I like a lot of anglers, I've been using sonar products for many, many, many years, and I think I'm pretty good at identifying them. But it's really difficult to actually pinpoint what you're seeing. Are you seeing your target species? And, you know, even just if you're going to fish a new area, oftentimes if it's an area of the lake that I haven't fished as much or haven't fished at all, I'll take 10 minutes and, you know, drop the camera down and just slowly move across it and see what's down there. You know, if there's any amount of fish down there, if there's some crappies, if there's some walleyes, whatever you're looking for, you'll pick a few of them up on camera, and that gives you the confidence to say, hey, they are down here. Now I'll put the camera down and do some fishing.
Speaking of Chris Munchow from AquaView, aquavu.com is their website. We have got the AV Micro 2. Very nice system. Great for ice fishing. Chris, I tell you what, I saw so many fish. And what was really cool this year was I was jigging a minnow and saw this huge pike come rolling in. You know, it'd roll by, just nothing but spots rolling by the camera. And you would watch it come up, look at it, it would turn and go away. Well, the minnow, you know what? It wasn't getting the right reaction that I was looking for. So I switched, tail hooked a more lively minnow, same pike, completely different story. So that gives you the opportunity, when you can see these things, to make adjustments accordingly. Because, look, one, you might know it's down there on your radar, or your sonar rather, but you don't know why it's not reacting. AquaView, give me that opportunity to change up and then hook that fish.
Yep. Yeah, you learn an awful lot. It's amazing how often, if you're fishing with live bait, maybe that minnow just isn't very active. Maybe you didn't hook it. I from time to time just do not hook the hook the bait very well, and I'll be watching it on the camera, and it's like, all right, I gotta fix something there, because it's just not, as you said, it's not moving, it's not getting the reaction you need to. You don't want to have to, you know, jerk the line to wake it up a little bit. So it can really help with your presentation. Another really good trick I learned this year was, you know, I've been ice fishing for many, many years, and I don't often use a swivel, but I saw some really good underwater video by one of our pro staff guys showing how adding a swivel above your jig will really improve your presentation. It's not down there spinning. You know, spinning is not a natural movement for fish, and by adding just a simple taking an extra minute and adding a swivel, it'll really improve your presentation to the fish.
Huh. Well, there we go. I've learned something again. You know, this is why I do this show. It's not about anybody else. It's about what I learn.
You bet.
No, actually, it's about, look, if I'm learning something, then everybody else is too, which I think is great. Now, let's talk about the AV Micro 5, because this is going to be my next step. I love the AV Micro 2. It's great. But with the digital recording capabilities on the AV Micro 5, I think that's something I want to go to now, because then you could share that experience and teach everybody at the same time what you saw.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we're going to offer, we have the Micro 5 available with the DVR, and we also have the standard micro size with the Micro Plus DVR. So anglers have a couple of different options there. The neat part about that Micro 5 is we also did some engineering on that unit. It has the 5-inch screen, so it's bigger, and we also added some additional screen capabilities, so it's going to be a little more visible in the boat in brighter sunlight. We you know, made that unit so people can you know, be more comfortable using that unit on their boat in open water situations. It's great mounted next to your console if you have a console boat. I've been running mine here up in the front bow, just on a ram mount, and it's neat, you know, neat to have with you. Another nice tool up there, and we're actually doing some testing right now on a product that's gonna, you know, allow you to use the camera on a more consistent basis during open water, hands free. We're hoping to have something out on that soon, maybe a press release in a few weeks or a month, but that'll be another tool to add to the open water arsenal for the AquaView underwater cameras.
And real quickly, we got Father's Day coming up next weekend, and you know, you have some great accessories for these things too, for folks that already have an AquaView system. Let me recommend the AquaView Mopod, because that is so essential for ice fishing, to be able to extend those legs out, put it over just about any size hole, you know, that you can do with a hand auger or power auger, and to be able to position your camera, to turn your camera with a remote control.
Yep, yeah, the Mopod, if anglers haven't used one for ice fishing, you know, and if you, especially if you're going to set up and use the camera for fishing, it's almost a necessity to have one. As you said, it goes over any size hole, and you know, it rotates the camera for you via wireless remote, so you can, I keep that thing right on my zipper in the winter time, and you can you know, find your lure quickly. If something swims by and you want to follow it, you just simply hit a button and you can pan right with the fish. That's real fun when those big cruiser predators come through, the pike and the muskies. It's kind of fun to follow them around and see what they're doing. Oftentimes they'll turn and come back, and yeah, the Mopod is a real great accessory for you know, if, as you said, if you're purchasing for an angler that already has a AquaView, that's a great accessory to get. And then we also have some stuff that can help you in the boat or on the ice as well, like our Pro Snake Arm.
All right, Chris Munchau here on Wild Michigan.
To everyone that has served this great country, keeping us free to enjoy the great outdoors, thank you. From Duran Martinez and Team Wild Michigan.
I'm just trying to be a father, raise a daughter and a son, be a lover to their mother, everything to everyone.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. Duran Martinez, your host on the Michigan Talk Network. Thanks to Chris Munchau from AquaView joining us, talking about the AquaView cameras and open water situations. Also, Brian Brosdahl talking about pan fishing and doing a little fishing on Lake Bemidji right now. I hate you, but I don't hate you at the same time, Brian. Oh, bro, thank you so much. And right now, Dave Wheeler from Lucky Buck is on the road, but taking time out right now to talk with us. Welcome back, Dave. How are you, sir?
Thank you. I'm good.
Good. Now, we were talking with Doug Roberts, the deer professor, on our show today from Conquest Sense. Doug is around, a couple hundred deer, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we were talking off air about Lucky Buck. He knows how important it is, not only for, for an attractant, for a mineral supplement, but again, he was emphasizing the importance of getting Lucky Buck out after this harsh winter because of the minerals and the supplements inside that are going to help the deer. I mean, not only with antler growth, but overall health with the whole herd.
Yes, and it's even more important to the bucks that went through a stressful rut prior to the winter season. And it was rough enough on me, much less the deer have to be out in it all year long.
Now, what minerals, what are they missing? I know with forage being minimal and them really having to scrape for any kind of food sources, what does Lucky Buck have that's going to get this herd back, back and healthy, I guess?
Well, actually, they're benefiting the most from this new grass. As it's growing in its immature stage, it's really high in protein and even more importantly, high in energy. And that's what's really going to rebuild their body mass and their body condition and get them back into good shape. But in conjunction with that, we're supplementing just the mineral side of it, which is not nearly as critical as the energy and protein, but in a different way is critical for the immune system and the general health of the deer, putting them back into shape. Just as they lose all that body weight, their stress levels and their ability to fight diseases and infections is reduced. We're helping in that more than actually putting the body weight back on.
It's pretty important too, especially right now with does and fawns. I mean, they're starting to drop. Some of the first cycles are being dropped, and some of the later ones will come this month. That's helping them as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. The selenium especially, and that's what I keep coming back to over and over again. That's the part of the mineral that I emphasize publicly. I do a few things that I don't tell people that are helping the deer also, but the selenium is the one that you can actually go online or you can do a little research yourself and see how important. There's very little actual research on wildlife, but there's tremendous amounts on livestock and domestic animals, and that's where the translation between the two, we've kind of made that step where others have kind of ignored it, I think.
It's important, and when you can help all of the herd, and we've talked about we talked with Doug about the shift in where deer are staying because of the winter, maybe some warmer thermal areas or places with more food. And, we want to get them back into our trail camera, especially if we hunt a small parcel of private land or even public land. We want to get them back to where we're at. And I think this is one way with the attractant end of things that's going to help that.
Absolutely. They're going to pick up a salt source one way or the other, whether it's a natural mineral source or a water softener discharge or an industrial discharge of some kind, or the salt blocks or the rocks or the various straight salt products that you can get also. But what we've done is we've tried to take advantage of that attractant and add the nutrients that are going to, like you say, bring these deer back into good health after that severe winter.
Yeah, it was a tough winter for sure, and I had noticed that, by putting trail cameras out and the like that, and even my Lucky Buck spots, Dave, I was like, okay, why is this stuff still piled up here? Because normally there's a mud pit where things were, but that's when I called in Doug to find out about this shift. Am I crazy? Am I doing something wrong? But again, he explained that, they moved and it's getting them back.
Yep. And they're going to be looking for minerals. They're going to be looking for those good food sources. And the food sources you've had year after year will come back, and they'll end up migrating back into their core areas again. It's just going to take a little time.
Now, again, for those folks that are not familiar with Lucky Buck is based out of Osseo, Michigan, one of our sponsors here on the show. Dave, for somebody just being introduced to Lucky Buck, here we are in June, what is the best way to apply it to our areas that we hunt?
If you've got a pinch point or a funnel area, that's the best place to drop it, and there's no sight prep required at all. You just dump it out. I tell people the hardest part is getting that lid off the bucket, and after that, you just dump it.
No, you left out the mosquitoes getting back there, Dave.
The nice thing is, and that's on a little more serious note, even if you're trying not to pressure an area, if you have an area that's a sanctuary area or something, there's nothing in this that'll spoil, and so you can put out basically several months worth at a time and go back fairly infrequently, where a food source you'd be going out there weekly and pushing them out of the area to put new product in. But we've designed Lucky Buck so if it gets a little rain on it or something, it won't spoil. It'll dissolve slightly or crust over, but they'll go right after it, and there won't be any spoilage or any backing off, even under wet conditions.
You know, speaking with Dave Wheeler from Lucky Buck, lucky-buck.com, there's a link directly on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Dave, I have noticed that even with rain, it does. It just kind of bunches up a little bit. It'll stay there, and when they get to eating it, they'll eat the hole in the ground. They'll ingest the soil around it.
Yep. Most of the other products have some grain products in it, either to get the deer to eat it or to cheapen the mix. And unless you're putting it through a feeder or in a pen situation, it doesn't really make any sense because it's going to get pretty nasty as soon as it gets wet the first time.
Now, where can we find Lucky Buck? I know you have a dealer locator on your website, lucky-buck.com. And it's in a lot of the big box stores like Gander Mountain. I know my friends out of Country Woods Archery in St. John's carry it. Do you have some other more spots that folks can go find Lucky Buck?
Yep, Cabela's and Gander are the two big sporting good big box stores. Tractor Supply has it, and a lot of independent archery shops, almost all of them in this listening area are carrying it, or if they're not carrying it, they can get it, but most of them have it in stock.
And also the nice thing about your website too is it has as updated as possible the rules for how to apply Lucky Buck in your state. I know we have certain rules here in Michigan that we need to abide by, but you have that on your website, which has got to be a lot of work keeping up with every year.
Yeah, there's a lot of changes going on, and a lot of people are just not keeping current with those, and I talk to them at shows, and they don't have the current information, so we decided that we would actually give a phone call to each DNR office nationwide for each state and determine if they had any changes and see if we could kind of interpret in a little easier language what the actual regulation is, so people were aware of the legality and how they needed to apply it to be completely legal. It's worked out really well. That's our busiest page on our entire website, is people looking for that information.
Definitely something we appreciate, Dave, to you and everybody over at Lucky Buck, because, you know, you can sell product all day long, but without the knowledge and behind it, it doesn't do a lot of good. You know, being able to speak with you and the guys there is helpful, because you can look at the nice, shiny, colored package all day long, and, you know, it's all guesswork, but having you here, having you as a sponsor, it's very easy to get that accessibility, and we appreciate that.
Well, thank you.
All right, Dave Wheeler from Lucky Buck, lucky-buck.com. There is a link on our website. It'll get you the proper rules, regulations, and how you can use it. We've been using it for a couple years. Fantastic results. Thanks again to Brian Brosdahl for joining us. Doug Roberts, the deer professor from Conquest Sense. Chris Munchau from AquaView here as well. Busy, busy show this week. Free fishing weekend in Michigan. Make sure that you know your regulations for size and catch limits while you're out there fishing with a license, because you don't need one this weekend. So keep it here, or visit us on our podcast at our website, wildmichiganradio.com, with links to all our guests here on the Michigan Talk Network.